to join us all up here. I apologize.
You got the first.
And I practiced this. And so what we'll do is we'll have John sitting here, and then Tom, and then Vic, and then Gary. And you're in a great spot there. You're perfect. You're down there, and we'll just. You're okay. You're good. John's here. And see, you guys, Gary and Tom will take it. Oh, don't sit there. Your seat's here. You like that one? Okay, we had to have a little fun because here's the good news is that getting through all of this gets us to the good networking, have a drink, have a cocktail right here, and reward yourself for sitting.
So did you say you were going to bring cocktails now, or we have to wait?
No, we have to listen to you first.
Some more vodka, please.
As I just said, joining our keynote speakers are Gary Bellabio of Akamai and Alan McLennan from the Badam Group. So, since we've just heard from John and Tom and Vic, let's just let Gary and Alan describe their organizations and how their work is related to our topic, security and reliability issues. So we'll start with Gary.
Okay. So for those of you who don't know who Akamai is, we are a content delivery network. Thank you. CDN, as was mentioned a couple of times in the in some of these presentations, we accelerate upwards of 30% of the world's internet traffic. And the funny part is that most of the general public has no idea that we even exist. And yet, you know, maybe at least, you know, conservatively once a week they're traversing through our network. In terms of reliability and security, our platform is a globally distributed platform, and it's built to provide not only fast access to any sort of content for any end user in the world, but it's also designed to help provide reliability and security as well. So we've built security rules just as a distributed network with 100,000 servers. It's a natural defense mechanism. But also within there, there's also ways to protect your applications from application layer attacks and other sorts of vulnerabilities. So we're protecting applications, you know, no matter where they're hosted, if they're on a cloud environment or even just a standard hosting environment. And then from a reliability standpoint, where we are constantly evaluating, you know, traffic patterns on the internet, routing around problems and congestion points on the internet, we're detecting if certain origin locations are actually down, and in real time we can fail over to secondary locations. So all that, you know, we can do so we can assure that every single end user request has a response, and hopefully it's a response with the data that they're looking for, or at least a very nice sorry page. So from a high level, that's what Akamai does.
All right, Alan McLennan. We have the PADM Group, that's Pure Advanced Digital Entertainment and Media. That's been around for quite a few years, starting back, you know, it's interesting listening to Vic, and it kind of dawned on me back in 97 and 98, I helped build, I think, perhaps the first content on demand cloud system called Select Play, where we delivered CD-ROMs around the world over networks, broadband networks. Stored in a server and accessed via IP devices. At that time, PCs and desktop computers in the home. Long time ago, but interestingly enough, that was existing at that period. And as we've evolved and grown from the entertainment industry and the media industry, this has all become a little bit more complicated, but still kind of the same basic premise. PADM, I work with a number of different companies around the world and advisory boards, as well as projects within the IPT television environment, the cloud-based distribution of content to multiple devices, and a chief analyst around the world with the companies playing in that space, including conditional access, and just basically how things are packaged and brought forth into the marketplace. I'm not the technical side, But unfortunately for a lot of the engineers, I have a pretty good idea of how it all works. So, and yet all the magic that still takes place.
Thank you. Okay, what did you hear in the keynotes regarding the cloud-based content management, storage, and delivery that raises the greatest concerns regarding security or reliability? Where is the most serious threat in this? And we will start here with John.
For content, specifically? Well, our focus is, or my focus in the last few years has been on media content, video and audio specifically, so I can speak to that. There are other forms of content.
Yes.
I would say the biggest threat. Well, there are many threats, and there are different parties being threatened, but I would say that if you're talking about the studios, they're being threatened, and then if you talk about consumers, I think their threat is to, their personal content and whether or not their personal content is accessible to people who it shouldn't be or exposed in ways it shouldn't be. What is the greatest? I would say it's probably the most impact is personal content. People are putting a lot of their personal content up. Maybe one of the biggest repositories of personal content is Google, and there's a lot of concern over the rights management around that content, and how that gets two things: how it gets protected, but also how it is easy for the user to manage how it gets protected. Facebook also, of course, but those. I think the challenge around that is. Better forms of protection and better accessibility to managing it for the consumer. Those are probably two big hot ones.
I think my opinion is very similar, although I'm going to take a little bit different angle with it, which is I think one of the biggest challenges is the individual's ignorance of things like the license terms for the content that they post. So and not to pick on Google, but theirs is the classic one, right? The license terms for posting your content to Google service basically says they own it, they can do whatever they want with it, and if it happens to be your intellectual property, then too bad, right? So that's not really, I think, something that people understand very well. And we get calls from people who, a lawyer called us who said, yeah, we've been collaborating on these manuscripts, and everybody's posting them up to Google Docs, and we haven't published this content yet. They didn't know it. This is a big company, a big publishing company. So I think there's challenges there, both personally and on a corporate standpoint, of people just really don't get what free means, right? In the sense that you get this free service, right? The other one, I think, is culturally, both in terms of other nations as well as within this country, there's ignorance about intellectual property and the value of it and what it means on the part of an entire generation. And there's bound to be an inevitable backlash when the people in this country realize that we're in a knowledge economy and we've been ignoring intellectual property rights for the last 30 years, and that's all we really have of value to the rest of the world is our intellectual property, and that other countries have kind of built economies and societies and everything else around not really respecting intellectual property rights either, and that there's going to be a major challenge there in terms of international trade, privacy laws with other countries, all that kind of stuff. And I think that's, being a little bit maybe more philosophical than you wanted to, that's, to me, the biggest challenge.
It's all yours.
Well, how about China? I mean, so intellectual property, I think here in the West, we tend to respect intellectual property a little bit more than China does. My father joked, he's 91, that if my book was translated into Chinese, they would only ever have to make one copy, right? So, intellectual property is, and privacy concerns, most certainly. But I go back to what you said about the, or you, because I'm confused.
You look kind of low. The broad coat, the great
hair. The point about I don't think it's fair to call it ineptness. I just think that there is so much that goes into making this work that most people don't understand, right? That as just consumers of technology, I think we're becoming slaves. And you see it with kids and their willingness to post everything. They don't live in the real world. They live in a world where they're enslaved by this new form of communicating among themselves. It's not all bad, but it's not natural. It's completely unnatural. And I think that somebody else said earlier that one of the problems is that law takes a long time to catch up with technology. Well, how about gunpowder? Has law caught up with gunpowder yet? You know, that's a technology that's several thousand years old now. So I think that by the time kids grow up and they figure out what they've done, you know, like by posting, have you seen them? I mean, they can't walk into a room and not check in on, you know, whatever else is going on. They're just scrolling through. But by the time they wake up and realize where they're at, there's this all this stuff that's up in Google, all this stuff that's up in Facebook, and it's been used in lots of ways that are interesting. Now that Glitch Girl, you know who Glitch Girl is? She was the girl on the Affordable Care Act webpage. I'm not going to call it Obamacare. Oh, just did.
Oh, I think it's time for us to move to Gary.
But her picture was taken off that website because of concern over, you know, some out of band feedback to her, right? Some unpleasantness. So it says just digital content is it lends itself to being misused, and it will be misused.
Gary?
Big question. So, I mean, I think from the most serious threat standpoint, you know, to me it comes down to, so one of the comments that was made in one of the presentations was, you know, once you email out, you know, that copy, it's out there. You don't really know how many other, you know, people actually have it, right? So that's one thing. Once it's out on the public, you know, internet, right, it's sort of, it is out of your control. And it comes down to the unknown, right? So Where is it? Who has it? You know, and really comes down to dealing with that. So I mean, I think you can deal with these situations. I think once you put it out there, you need to expect that something is going to happen to it. And you know, you kind of have to have sort of strategies to be able to deal with it when certain problems arise. I think in terms of a lot of companies that I work with, they've, you know, come to this acceptance of when I put my content or I put my application into a cloud environment, I've evaluated that it is the right thing to put out into, you know, sort of the public environment like that. And I think every company has to, you know, critically look at, you know, the information that they want to put out there. At least, and that's from an enterprise standpoint. I think from a personal standpoint, it is very interesting to see the type of information, you know, that other generations are putting out there. It's a perspective thing. I think, you know, they're dealing with it in different ways. I think, you know, my kids are going to have different things that they're dealing with, you know, cyberbullying and all this other stuff that I never had to deal with, right? So putting that information out there, so you just have to figure out how you're going to deal with it, right? And that's really what it comes down to, because it is going to happen. You just expect it to happen, and then figure out, you can put all the controls you want into place, but you can't protect yourself from everything for sure, right? So it's all about reacting to it.
Right, and I know as our children were growing up, it was, don't put anything in an email that you don't want to see on the front page of the New York Times. But I think, and we drilled that in, but I think we've gotten, as you're all saying, way away from that. And the realization is many people don't think where it's going. Alan?
Could you repeat the question for me? I think we got a little bit sidetracked.
It's my fault.
Okay. What did you hear in the keynotes regarding cloud-based content management, storage, and delivery that raises the greatest concerns for security or reliability? Where is the most serious threat?
The afternoon sessions. I think the afternoon sessions is actually getting the consumer to accept broadband metering that was brought up. Yeah. I thought that, you know, right now we are in all, you know, all you can eat society, everybody wants everything at a certain time. And there was many different topics that were addressed, but trying to pull some, get the horse back, you know, I was raised on a farm and ranch, get the horse back in the, you know, in the stable is a very difficult challenge once they get out and start running around. And at the moment, you know, anybody want to give up their all consumption data plan right now? I mean, whatever you want. I mean, I'm not going to give that up. I'll keep that telephone number as long as I possibly can because I have a completely open data plan. My son, there's a commercial out right now that's incredibly funny to me. I'm not sure who it is. It's AT&T or Verizon or someone that says they're traveling in Europe and our son's traveling in Europe and their data plan is, what is it? T-Mobile. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, and saying, you know, they're both talking to him and then the most recent one is like, it's $4,820. You know, what are you doing? And there's just no concept of this. So when it all comes back to broadband metering, it's, you know, all of this is very generational. Consumption, you know, that leads to a threat on education. And education is now more search reliant than it is actually understanding the topic. It's how fast you can get the answer versus the process of being actually educated. And that's being seen on an ongoing basis around the world.
That's we had to use libraries.
Well, it's a process. It's a thinking process. It's how you find it, how you digest it, and how you work it. We're finding this around the world. I interviewed 42 different operators around the world in the last 6 months in a project that I'm on, and it's carte blanche. The problem is broadband metering, amount of data that's coming through, the need to be more efficient in the distribution of the content. We're having a conversation at lunch about machine-to-machine or computer-to-computer exchange. BitTorrent, for example, is a brilliant technology. It's starting to come back in its day. So, I wrote a number of things down here, and I wrote generational, educational, and then bottom line of this is just respect. Respect of what the management of the process. There was an interesting, recently I was on something in Norway, and that Norway project, we're discussing how a music service that had come into the country. You know, and this was 2 years ago, big event. Question was, how many of you download free music? Probably about 98% of the hands went up. We're talking about 2,000 or 3,000 kids, and adults for that matter. Just 3 months ago, I asked that same question, and a smattering of hands went up. Why? This music service came in, and it was priced at such an affordable level that everybody was willing to pay for it. So broadband metering, proper valuation of the content that's being distributed. So.
Thank you. Okay. Secondly, what did you hear in the keynotes or in the answers that we've just heard from the five panelists about security or reliability with which you most disagree and why? Which perceived threat, if any, is not real and why? And we'll start with Tom.
Well, I'm inherently paranoid, so I'm not sure. The perceived threat question is a good one for me. Frankly, I didn't hear anything that made me go, oh, he's full of it. But in terms of where I think there's maybe a concern that's misplaced, we have a lot of people who look at cloud security as being something where their data being in the cloud is where the threat lies, right? That's this notion of if it's not inside my four walls, then it's protected. And you know, I mean, the analogy I always use is you keep your money in a bank, right? It's a lot of what I've heard backs this up, which is that security is a set of processes and procedures. It's not location specific. It's not specific. You know, there's a lot of misconceptions around that. And I think with cloud in particular, that people's perception of it being inherently less secure is kind of, it shows a level of misunderstanding about what it really is. Because fundamentally, cloud is not really a new technology. It's a new business model that allows you to buy what you need when you need it and turn it off, and you couldn't do that before. But the technologies are no different, and IT and information security really hasn't changed fundamentally as a result of cloud. It's just our perception of it has.
Okay. We're renting more, not buying, and...
Yeah, and we're putting stuff in a location where we're not exactly sure where it is, right? But kind of like the new cars that don't need a key, maybe it doesn't matter where it is, right? You know, as long as the car recognizes me when I walk up there, whether it's my voice or my fingerprint or whatever, I can get in and drive it. I don't really care where the keys are. You know, and if it all works the way it's supposed to, then we're good.
Yeah.
That was a great set of comments. And I fought that attitude back in the day when we at Sun built the first public cloud utility. And you know, many flights back and forth to California sit next to people and they say, what are you doing? Describe, you know, what a cloud is. I go, oh, I wouldn't trust that. I, you know, need to keep it on my computer at home. And the next question I would ask is, what do you know what your computer is doing? You know when it makes those whirring, clicking noises when you're not doing anything on the keyboard? Do you know what it's doing? Those are communists. And they're on the other side, they're, you know. No, really. And so, I mean, if you don't understand how something, if you don't understand how something works, then you're going to be very suspicious about it. It's kind of like magic, right? Any sufficiently advanced technology will come across as magic. And if you don't understand the magic of it, then you can't, it would be a mistake to trust it. But that's the problem, that these technologies have become so pervasive and they're becoming more pervasive. The ubiquity of software in our world is 100%. The software guy is the god today, right? I mean, it's not right. Anybody
so we,
else.
Right, so if we lose our email, we just call up NSA and say, give me my copies, you all.
So that's a very unfair characterization of what's going on.
It's pretty funny.
And I think that the key is really going to be that these technologies have to be expressed to users and wrapped with the kind of assurance that will stand up in court, that this is what your limits are, and this is what our limits are, and this is why we're expressing this, and this is why we're making money off of this one, and so forth. And right now, it's a little bit dirty. You know, Google saying we'll do no harm, right? Do no evil.
Yeah.
It's a little bit dirty because you know that it's free, right? So why am I getting it for free?
Sure.
But it's not evil. And in the case of Google, they're not really evil. I mean, that would be unfair too.
Right.
They're making money, and they'll make a lot of money. It'd be good to buy Google stock, right? To stay in that game, because that company's going places. But yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, from my standpoint, I think it was mentioned in Tom's talk about big data. I mean, to me, the big data aspect. First of all, to answer your question, nothing I disagreed with from any of the presenters, really. There's loads of topics I would love to go in deeper on. You know, we still have enough time here. But you know, from the big data element, that's the part that I see. It's scary, but it's also it's really amazing at the same time. So I get kind of spooked sometimes when I see an ad, you know, pop up for a website I was just at, right? Or, you know, that whole ad that says, hey, come back to your Amazon cart and start to, you know, check out, right? At first I was kind of like, oh man, like what else? You know, there's a ton of information that people have about me as I use my phone and I check in Foursquare and, you know, they know I'm here, they know I'm there, they know I like this, know I like that. It gets a little confusing when my kids take over my phone, but that's, you know, different stories. Then I start getting Mickey ads and stuff. But I actually don't like it when I get these ads that are totally irrelevant to me, right? But then as they get more targeted, they get more personal, it's kind of like, oh, that's kind of funny, you know, like, okay, yeah, I should get back to, you know, to RightScale's website or whatever it was I was doing for work at the time, right? So that part, I think, is, so that's the, you know, the humor side of it, but I think there's real value there. I think there's real opportunity there. When you think about the enormous amount of data that we're collecting, yeah, it could be used for good, it could be used for, you know, things you not you don't agree with, but that's what I'm doing. I mean, I know I'm putting that stuff out there, and for the things that I'm really concerned about, I highly protect it, right? So like my social security number or something, like I don't put that out there, right? And that's just kind of like my own personal, you know, choice. I also think too the bandwidth comments; those are real comments. I know from our standpoint, from an Akamai standpoint. We're looking at upwards of 25,000 terabits per second of data that we'll need to be able to support, you know, in the next, you know, 5 years, right? It's an enormous number, and the thinking around that is actually really interesting from an architectural standpoint. Well, how the heck are you going to support something like that? The networks themselves probably can't support something like that. So, you know, there's interesting problems. I think we'll get through them with some new technologies that will get created. you know, over the next 5-10 years. I think this is a really exciting time.
I want to just kind of take right off of that without you asking. When you're looking at the ability that we have at the table and in this room, you know, I just want us to remember that there's some tremendous efforts going on within the companies, I mean, Oracle, HP, Cisco, Negri-Kodelsky, they're trying to figure out how to do conditional access and how to deliver this content out into the marketplace. But I don't even think we understand where we're at today. We have the level of demand that is going to be expected of our industry in the course of the next 2 to 3 years is going to be overwhelming. Being able to secure something is going to be key, yes. But it's also along the lines of understanding how things are being consumed and being used. And that comes back to big data and understanding of that. I'll just give some examples. I mean, we're talking about what we input. I'm doing some projects right now with reviewing some companies. I'll give you an example, iBehavior. Does anybody know who iBehavior is? iBehavior is a company that basically monitors all the loyalty contacts that when you buy something, not Visa, not MasterCard, but iBehavior. It's like Experian. It's another company's name that I throw out there. Mm-hmm. You know, iBehavior has 195 million loyal files, people, that every day you buy something, they know everything that's going on with you. Once you lay that on top of your television or your online purchase or viewing behavior, they know exactly what you're doing. So when it comes back to the good side of this, is getting the kind of advertising that you'd like that helps you manage your time. So when you're looking at the intelligence that is within the cloud, the ability to distribute that out with again intelligent content or interest that you have that you want to watch or engage with, is very real. LG and Showtime just launched 6 weeks ago, something that basically is a technology that will be in all LG smart televisions. Those smart TVs will map every second what you're watching. It's lined up with Tribune Media, very, very involved in this. And the fact of it is that they're now going to map that on top of whether it comes from a game console, an IP device, whatever it might be, to be able to intelligently understand how the programmers will be able to serve up content. And getting back to, you know, one of the comments that was said, I'm not sure where that comment came from, to tell you the truth, was about television programming, you know, and how it's all going to be on demand. And it will be on demand. But we have to remember from a television programmer standpoint, they still own the airs, and you still have to create groupings around that programming. And if you notice, we're seeing a lot more television advertising about new programs. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody's noticed that, but all of a sudden there's like Robin Williams' show is, gosh, every like 6 minutes there's a commercial about him. Those numbers are going down. Well, what they're doing is they're building up an on-demand component every week to try to generate the association with the advertising. So there's a scramble. And when I come back and say there's some great companies out there doing some tremendous things, the brain trust that are in the major corporations of trying to address this, from Microsoft to Ericsson to, you know, Telefonica to Deutsche Telekom, I mean, they're on it. And they're trying to figure it out in their communities. And we could go on and on on this.
Well, I guess I just have one quick comment. No disagreements, but there was one comment I think Vic made about China. And that's actually our second largest market for content protection. So I don't know if that trend is, or that perception is as accurate as it used to be.
Okay, as we're getting down in running out of time here, let me just throw this out. Where do you think the relevant cloud technologies and our businesses will be in a year, 3 years, or even 5 to 10 years from now? What mainstream companies will get involved? How will they participate?
They are.
Where are cloud-based solutions in these areas trending? And how does your company fit in this picture? In other words, you know, just take a minute and what's your vision of the future of this space? And I see Gary just like ready to go.
Go.
So I'm going to go with Gary first.
Wait, you got it.
I'm going to take the rest of the time. I think from a high, you know, from a high level, I mean, this is a fast-growing space, right? There's a lot of excitement around it. There's still a lot that's not going over there, at least from an enterprise standpoint. I think there will be a shift that comes over the next 3, 5, 10 years. I actually think for a lot of the security elements that we're talking about, there's a lot of different angles there. And I think when you look at it from an industry standpoint, there's specific needs, there as well. When you think about healthcare, financial services, governments, there's different regulations that they need to adhere to. And so I think, there's certainly going to be more and more establishments that are going to try and cater to those specific needs, whether it is, the mainstream cloud providers or if there's new ones who will pop up. I also think too, the infrastructure as a service hasn't even grown to the level that I really think it needs to be at, just in terms of, from a geographical standpoint. Amazon's in 9 POPs today, but there's a hell of a lot more countries out there, if I can use that term, than that for sure, and that you need to get into. I think that's going to happen. In terms of the your traditional players, I mean, I think it was kind of said while you're asking the question, they are there. I think it is the biggest threat to their traditional business. There's no doubt. So they have to join it. But I still think they have more work to do. I still think there's the up and coming players. They're still threatening, their space. And the big guys are becoming more of the followers to it, which is kind of sad to watch, but that's kind of the way it is. But I think we're going to see more of this, especially from the smaller guys taking over, a lot of the business from the bigger guys.
I would agree with you entirely. It's just a matter of the only reason why the bigger guys are, failing is just because they have bureaucracy internally to try to move something out without being fully vetted. The entrepreneurs and startups are able to push it out there right away, which is all good. Yeah. It just sometimes can take you down different paths that you're not necessarily needed. I mentioned earlier where I stand. Do you want a year, 2 years, 5 years? 5 years, forget it. 2 years, I'd say to meet the need of the industry to be able to deliver video. Video is what the world's all about. Generationally, like we identified, 22 and younger live in a virtual world. I mean, their world is all whatever it might be, which is good. It's good for everybody. But that is rather key. Where I think things are probably going to be moving, I think you're going to see a war within about 3-4 months when the Olympics come out in Sochi between Azure and Amazon with S3. S3's platform to be able to manage the content within the cloud is exceptional. Joyent has a tremendous platform within Mantra. But where this all kind of comes to, and as we start capturing all this information about all of us, the data is going to get massive out there. So what does that translate to? That translates to me where we're going is like within data gravity. Data gravity is a massive form of data that actually creates its own universe to be able to have smaller forms of data attached to the bigger. And that's where we're moving from a scientific standpoint, is that ability to manage the size of data that's within the farms in and of itself. And those are virtual farms. Virtualization of the content and the data is going to become very key as we just get more information about everything that I do every moment of the day. And that's going to lead to advertising models and new viewing models and programming models, and we're going to then be able to control. It's going to flip. So I wish John Perry Barlow was sitting right here next to me, because I think that would lend itself to a tremendous debate and conversation behaviorally and culturally around the world.
Okay, thank you. John.
I forgot the question.
Yeah. you're in my place.
What's your vision?
Oh, vision. Yeah, vision. Thanks. I was like, that was quite a vision. What was that again? I think that the trend for moving things into hosted services, I mean, I think cloud is obviously used for lots of different levels of the stack, but to me it means hosting. It means pushing things out into an area where somebody else is managing the infrastructure and you're worrying about the application and you're worrying about making sure the presentation, making sure the service, making sure the support around it. is what it should be, but the operation of the bits and bytes and of the hardware and whether it's spinning up and what stack it's on and all that is really commoditized to a point where you really don't care. It just, you just make it work. And I think that's just gonna, it's gonna be much bigger than it is today. I think it's incredible that Amazon saw this when they did, because it's been an interesting ride, even in the last few years, seeing the transformation happen so quickly. And I think it's just, almost everything's gonna be running on other people's hardware. It's just a matter of building the economy around it and the support around it so that it's easy to move around and it's easy to leverage pricing and to be portable.
Tom?
I think the App Store model is relevant in the sense that application and software providers and people who are doing really clever things, these startups that we've talked about, you know, 9 out of 10 startups, even picked by the best VC companies in the world, fail, right? And most of them are going to fail. That's the nature of, you know, hopefully they fail fast, and with cloud they fail cheaper. But the ones that succeed get swallowed up by the bigger players or become part of the bigger players. But in terms of the infrastructure for cloud, it's all big old companies. Mm-hmm. I mean, Akamai's biggest competitor is Level 3. Anybody want to guess what Level 3, how old Level 3 is as a company and what they started in? They're a 114-year-old mining company, right? So anybody know when Nintendo was founded?
Yeah.
When?
You mean pre-video games?
Yes.
In the 60s?
1889.
Oh, the card company is
1889.
Well, they're kind of smart. They keep evolving.
Yeah, exactly. And that, to me, that's what's interesting about it is it's old, there's old guard companies that are going to provide the infrastructure. They're big utility companies like the one I work for and lots of others. And now we have a lot of those companies who are just sort of providing a platform for tremendous innovation. And the intellectual property that's coming out of universities and startups and really clever people is, you know, is going to magnify the value of the infrastructure, and the infrastructure as a utility will get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper as it gets more ubiquitous, and that's really what's going to drive, you know, our economy for at least the next 5 to 50 years.
Vic, you've got the last word.
Yeah, no, that word utility is definitely where it's headed. So it's nobody runs their own power plant; they don't run their own phone. Right? I mean, they may have a PBX or software phone systems, but they don't string wire to everybody that they communicate with. And there's no reason why you need to own much of a compute capability within your enterprise or even host it. I mean, you draw upon what is available through the wall, through Ethernet. It's the standard. And Amazon, the S3 stuff and Amazon's models will become the standard ones, and the other providers provide those as well. So it how things will look to the consumers, there'll probably be two divisions. The walled garden, which works exactly as you expect it to work every time you need it to work, and then there's the Wild West, where you can mash things up from different services, and it will all just work together. And it will work more or less. You'll learn it breaks, and you won't use it that combination again. But you'll be able to do much more of this mashing up of your own services than you can imagine today, because it will be dumbed down to that level. So software will become itself a utility.
Well, I thank the panel greatly. And it is time for cocktails. But is there one person who dares to ask a question that keeps us between
cocktails?
Our cocktails.
Red or white?
Which direction?
So, is there anyone who has this burning question that they can't keep till they get to cocktails? Well, I thank you all very, very much for